It has been a long time coming,
Mm.
and as people may be aware, for 3% of the population, we make up around about 30% of the prison population for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So it's a huge issue that's needed addressing for a long time. And our community's been advocating for such a long time here in Victoria, well over 40 years, to, I guess, convince successive governments of the benefits of not only connection to culture and expressing that culture through art, but the importance of some economic security and independence and being able to, you know, develop a self-generated legitimate income and the how important that is upon release when a lot of our mob are going back to exactly the same circumstances that led them into the prison in the first place. So it's a really significant move by the Victorian government. A lot of things have had to come into place and be aligned for this to happen. You know, about bipartisan support for it, the support of Corrections Victoria, the success of the Indigenous Arts in Prisons and Community Program has gone a long way to, I guess, move this policy along. But also, let's not forget that over 40 years, the community's been advocating for this. When I left the Koorie Heritage Trust, Uncle Sandy Atkinson said to me, we were advocating hard for this when I was head of the Aboriginal Arts Council. He said, that's well over 40 years. He says, your turn now, young fella.
Mm.
And I could see, the, you know, he looked at me and said, you need to carry the hard work we've been doing. You need to carry it forward. And fortunately, with all of the support coming together and everything in place and goodwill on a lot of people's behalf and a lot of talking to just explain the benefits and people seeing the benefits through the program of the men and women, the benefits not only within the prison but in the post-release program, but the one sticking point, and it's something that we needed to address and it has been addressed, is economic security and the ability to develop that economic independence is crucial, particularly in that, you know, 6 to 9 to 12 months of first release.
Just so our brothers and sisters around the country can sort of understand this, so we have the TORCH, which is Indigenous Arts in Prisons and Community Program, and we have, you know, this new policy now, which is going to allow Aboriginal people to sell their artwork while they are incarcerated. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, and they're interlinked and tied together. So men and women in the program, in the Indigenous Arts in Prisons and Community Program, which I designed, developed and delivered over the last 4.5 years, through the program are able to sell their work. So the policy and the program are linked. And of course, it's early days. It's only been announced. We do have our annual exhibition on at the moment, the Confined 7 exhibition. So at the opening, 20 artworks were purchased through this new model, which was fantastic. There's plenty more, though, to be sold. There's about 140 works there this year from the 12 Prisons of Victoria in the post-release program. But it does mean that the TORCH has a great responsibility to administer the policy and really make it work. And so it's something that I feel, you know, I guess a great weight of responsibility for. We fought for it now, and so let's make it work. And so far, so good.
What happens if someone sells a painting while they're incarcerated? I mean, would they directly get paid now, or does it go into an account on their behalf?
The new Aboriginal art policy model is set up to provide economic support upon release. So the majority of the funds from the sale will be held in trust. A small amount will be accessible for the participants in the program whilst in prison. And then any interest earned upon the money in the trust will go to a victims of crime fund. So it's multi-layered, and I think it covers a good cross-section of support areas, so that I think it's great the interest going to the victims of crime support fund, the majority being held in trust because that's when it's needed. And in my, you know, when I'm working across the 12 prisons and talking to the men and women in the program, they pretty much all want all of the money to go into trust, but there needs to be the allowance for that person to make those decisions on their own behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, for some of them in the prison, they haven't got any external support, family, you know, contributing money into their account. So they really are very disadvantaged also within the prison system, and that's why there's a small amount that can be accessed whilst inside.
And certainly, you know, when people are released, you know, they're coming out to funds available so that they can, that can help them to reintegrate, I guess.
Yeah, look, that's right. It's all about reintegrating back into the community and reconnecting back into society and finding pathways forward. So I've seen when we've been able to sell artworks in the post-release program that men and women are able to do things that are helping them get through their paroles and find, you know, either gainful employment or going into study or leaving abusive relationships or destructive relationships because they felt empowered and have built their confidence and esteem and cultural knowledge whilst in the prison. But also now, if they want to make a major change in their lives, and that could often involve moving away from, you know, unfortunately from family or the community where they're from, they actually have the ability to do that.
You're listening to SBS Radio Living Black. I'm Michelle Lovegrove, and I'm speaking with Kent Morris, who's the Chief Executive Officer of the Torch Indigenous Arts in Prisons and Community Program. You know, I was focusing on the financial area because, you know, this is actually just such a huge thing. But for the artists themselves, you know, the work is not new. You know, this has been going on for decades and decades. You know, people have been exploring and refinding themselves, culture, a sense of community through artwork. I actually have a dear elder friend who didn't start painting till he went to jail, and it was through that you know, he's come out, and that's all he's ever done since. You know, he is an artist now, you know, and this is years later. So he found himself certainly through that work. So how important is it, I guess, a program such as this in terms of being able to sell artwork can assist the Torch with the sorts of work that you do, men and women who are incarcerated, connect?
I've met women in the program from, you know, 20 into their 60s, really. A couple of uncles in there. And again, similar story to what you've just said. Mm. Unfortunately, just learning to discover more about their culture and identity and painting whilst in prison. So it's a common thing that's happened for a long period of time. And look, really, at the instigation of this, you know, we've been incarcerated for a long time in this country, and I read a lot of accounts and stories of markings and engravings in wooden walls way back in the day, and how much over time our mob have always created whilst inside to bring country and culture into the prison for that strengthening and to keep that spiritual well-being going whilst incarcerated. Today we have obviously a lot of men and women coming down a lot of lines, you know, particularly from stolen generation and from families and communities who have been either separated or removed from country, and where culture has been not lost but displaced or just hasn't been passed down. So it's the program's really broad in that we try and bring in as much information as possible to do with each person's individual language group. What I find is that a lot of people will be able to identify and say they're Yorta Yorta or they're Barkindji or Gunai Kurnai, but beyond that they may not know a lot about, say, the history of their language group or creation stories related to that. Of course, in the prison, it's hard to paint your country when you're inside a jail cell. So a lot of photographs brought in of country and the relevant totem animals. Of course, stories of significant elders. Building that knowledge that we need to know who we are. Because if we don't know who we are, then it's hard to know what our role is or where we're going. So there's a real strong emphasis on cultural information and resources coming in for learning. Of course, as we talked about, the painting and creation of the works then starts to focus more on that person's own story and where they're from and who they are. I often say to some of the men and women, it's a fantastic painting, but if I look at it, I don't really know where you're from. You could be from a whole lot of places around this country, but, you know, just for, say, one example, a fellow who's Yorta Yorta painting sandy desert landscapes. I said, well, your country's often the beautiful forest wetland, the Barmah Forest, and I brought him in lots of images and pictures and cultural history, and he learned more about his family history, and he had a fantastic strong line going back to significant man, Cedric James, who started some of the, you know, Aboriginal advancement movement. So it's all that learning and to find out who we are, and that's the key, I think, it's one of the keys to build that sense of confidence, self-esteem and knowledge and to feel that you know who you are. And then the next step is that courage to find your place in the world. And again, this new Aboriginal arts policy model gives a crucial element in my mind, that you just need to have some financial support, but also you need to know that you can connect to our arts industry, which is vast and broad. And of course, we make the best art in the world. So it's very popular, but often the men and women will have no connection into that industry, you know, or feel intimidated by it in a way, or is my work good enough? Can I be part of that? And we're saying yes, you know, yes you can.